Chapter 1. Dreamtime. Louisville, Kentucky, 2001 AD. The room faded in and out. In the corner, a tiny old woman in a large conical blue hat henpecked a young man. The scene shimmered as Sarah watched. Hovering above the floor a short distance away, she floated. Garden gnome, thought Sarah. To Sarah's left, a fire blazed. A pot boiled, swinging gently from a hook embedded in the hearth. No stove, no fridge, no oven, no microwave. Terrible. Sarah could never cook here. Like camping all the time, she thought. The pot was boiling. A pungent scent of flowers wafted over her. Green, the scent drifted like incense, but not as cloying. Akin to the essential oils at the New Age shop close to the university. The fragrance comforted Sarah. On the scarred oak table, Sarah glimpsed herbs and flowers drying in the fire's heat. It smelled like the tank, the greenhouse where she did her work study. Sarah ran her finger along the table's edge, curious. It was rough-hewn but worn smooth with age. The corner of the table had seen recent damage, the darker varnish ripped away, leaving pale, naked, woody fibers. Sarah traced them, drawn to their texture. They pricked her finger. Great. I have a splinter. Sarah sucked at her sore finger and studied the man in the doorway. His image rippled in front of her as if she were looking through fumes of gasoline. Around and above him floated massive images. One was a glowing spider's web, wrapping him. It faded as she watched, replaced by a transparent gargoyle. The creature flapped its wings above his head and grimaced before fading into thin air. Robes which floated and moved, worn by invisible men, replaced the gargoyle. Behind these towered a massive tree. It looked like it was bleeding. These ghost-like images were so compelling, Sarah had trouble tearing her eyes from them to focus on the man. Tall, lean but muscled, with large hands, he had a shock of black hair that fell into his eyes, prominent ears, and a long nose. Those blue eyes fastened on her. They pierced her. He sees me. It's begun, the man whispered. He gestured toward Sarah. The flowers he held chimed softly as they moved. What's begun? Sarah tried to ask, but the words eluded her. She was drifting. The room dissolved. The images dissolved and she fell deep into a dreamless sleep. So you're still sleepwalking, Sarah. Dr. Carol Sherman pushed her glasses up her nose and made a note to herself. Her smile was encouraging. Are you keeping your dream log? Sarah nodded and dug through her pack, finding her black school notebook under the pile of books. Her finger was sore where she had dug out a splinter. She winced as the pain stabbed her. I am maimed, but I will push through. Stoic. Sarah grinned, laughing at her own inner dialogue. With a flourish, she handed the notebook to her therapist. Dr. Sherman flipped it open and scanned. You're not dreaming every night? You've recorded this one, only this one, recently. She stabbed the page. Before the semester started again. Do you see how stress is affecting you? She closed the journal and handed it back to Sarah. Sarah accepted the dream log, her expression doubtful. I know you say my dreams are stress-related, but that doesn't track since I've had these weird dreams and sleepwalking episodes my whole life. I admit, I don't always write them down. They seem silly. But I get your point. If it's stress, then working at the tank helps. The flowers there calm me. Carol looked at Sarah over the top of her glasses. You must log the instances consistently for progress to occur. Even if you can't remember details, just write a few lines to record what you can. Is there anything you can remember that you haven't recorded? Sarah made a face. Garden gnomes. How weird is that? They have the tall cap and everything, but they walk around. The gnomes aren't like they are in the stories, though. They aren't playing pranks or anything. The little guys mostly just work. I've seen this old woman gnome. An old man shows up, too, sometimes, but usually it's the woman. Sarah leaned forward, worried. Is that how I see myself? Or other people? Am I dreaming about this because I take care of plants? The lady gnome comes up and tries to talk to me when she sees me. Usually she's in the room with a huge fireplace. Then there's a guy, my age. Maybe a little younger. Sarah's forehead wrinkled as she looked up at the ceiling, trying to recall. He hangs out with the garden gnome. And he either glows or he has these pictures around him. Photos or images? Can you explain in more detail how they look? Asked Carol. They're images that flicker in the air around him like a heat haze. Sometimes a lot of images, sometimes not. They don't make any sense. Men with no heads, ninjas, more garden gnomes, big statues that move, a humongous bleeding tree, things like that. It's so weird. Carol made another note. Sarah flipped back through her notebook, stopping as she glimpsed a page and read through the notes, frowning. I'd forgotten this. I didn't write much because it upset me. I can't believe I forgot this. Terrible. I dreamed about a fire. A huge fire. It burned my house, but my house wasn't my house. But it was. All the trees burned, everything I owned and everything I loved. I had a huge garden, and it was destroyed, and after that, I got whipped. She shook her head as if trying to shake the images loose. Sarah suddenly felt weak. This makes no sense at all. Carol watched her for a moment. Sarah, I want you to stop trying to analyze who the gnomes are. It doesn't matter. Journal these things for now without judgment. You're processing stress. Your mind knows the level of stress you have, even when you aren't aware of the pressure. Your subconscious forms these images. It's okay. It's perfectly normal to experience anxiety after trauma. The accident, losing your twin sister, all of that is causing you enormous grief. I see guilt in you. You need to consider whether you're harboring guilt and define why. We've talked about that before. How you deal now with your anxiety, stress, and emotions matters. You're learning healthy ways to cope as you explore these things, and I'm proud of you, but it's very apparent that you need more rest. We can explore your real issues when you're more stable. Sarah held up her hand. No pills. We've been through this. Carol nodded. I respect your decision. To some extent, I agree with you, but a compromise might be in order. No sleeping pills, but have you heard of the chemical in turkey tryptophan? It causes you to get sleepy at Thanksgiving. There's a natural supplement called 5-HTP. It helps your body create more tryptophan. Would you consider taking it? Sarah hesitated, uncertain, then nodded. I have something for you, too. Use this as an icon. I'm not religious, Dr. Sherman. Carol smiled. It isn't that kind of icon. You're an artist. I'm sure you've studied iconography. She reached over and handed a necklace to Sarah. The ancient Hebrews believed an inscribed prayer guarded their children from demons as they slept. They hung amulets like these on the floor and on the four walls of the child's room. Those said, Lilit Abi. That's the origin of the word lullaby. This amulet has a stronger prayer, a command to leave. Use it as a talisman. When you see it, remember, you're safe. I know the power of suggestion and myth, even prayer. Myth speaks to the deep places in our imagination and psyche. If this doesn't help, we'll try something else. We can hang Native American dream catchers, perhaps. If this stops my sleepwalking, my scary sleepwalking, then I'll be happy. I don't care how silly it seems, Sarah said, examining the necklace. The words on the pendant were in Hebrew, and she couldn't read them. Keep your dream log, and don't forget to write out your feelings. This will help. We'll see how next week goes. When Sarah got to her studio, she started the coffee maker. She flipped on violin music, turning the volume down to background noise. Sarah padded to the shrouded figure in the middle of the small room, relishing her solitude. She coveted these days, given over to creation and exploration of her art. 3 days a week she went to classes, but as a senior art student, she had 2 full days to explore her passion with clay. Sarah studied her piece as she pulled off the plastic. It was taller than she was. A writhing column swept up from the floor. From a formless mass, the being morphed to become a creature of grace and stern visage, arms raised as if to hold back a tsunami. Neither male nor female, it struck her as a fire elemental. No. Something of heat and light and passion. Sarah wasn't certain yet. She was still discovering. Sarah frowned at the rough, unfinished eyes, and with a sigh retrieved her tool belt and unpacked her tools. She began carving detail into the clay, ignoring the pain in her wounded finger. She fought the urge to smash the piece and start all over. That impulse would pass. It hit her at least once a week. Still, those days were easier than the days she was sure her piece was perfect. On those days, she might decide to quit before the piece was truly finished. Then she would fire it, and it would remain frozen that way forever. She would have to live with it. Both responses were dangerous. When she was here, it was Sarah versus her canvas, whether using clay or paint. The fight she faced to always be honest and not run away from the piece. That fight daunted her. Sometimes Sarah imagined she was listening for answers, as if music were playing in another room she could half hear. If she reached for it, she could enter a zone where nuance came easily and mistakes resolved into innovations. Sarah couldn't make excuses or flatter herself. She couldn't dodge this effort. No one would do this for her. She had to show up and reach for the truth of this piece, listen for that music and translate it. Regardless of whether she believed she would actually achieve what she was attempting or not, Sarah had to throw herself into this struggle. Sculpting was worse than painting. With sculpture, she faced this battle in the conception and sketching stage, as well as during the sculpt. The sculpt flew by. Putting planes into motion came easily. The build exhilarated her as the form accepted shape and texture. Even when maddening, it was satisfying. When her piece fired, Sarah prayed that it wouldn't explode, or that the glazes and paints wouldn't become muddy. The piece might transform in 100 ways into something that others couldn't read. Then the vision she carried inside of her would die, unrealized, as the process destroyed it before it was born. Sometimes it did. That was reality. Was that why she loved working with clay so much? It had to pass through a fire and survive. On some primal level, she connected with that. Rilla's face flashed, screaming before her. Sarah gasped and dropped her tool. Her twin sister's face that last night before the accident haunted her when she was alone. She stopped, stood perfectly still, and breathed in and out. The loss and shame washed over her, and she allowed it. But she did not let the emotion engulf her. No, I won't dwell on this, not now. This is my sacred space. Unbidden, another image flashed through her mind. The gnome from her dreams, smiling. Sarah focused on that image, comforted by it, as if by a mother. Then she opened her eyes and began again. Her breathing quieted. Sarah worked in a rhythm, swaying in time to the music, humming as the concerto enveloped her. She dragged a stepladder over and climbed it to reach the upper portion of the towering structure, adding texture as she absorbed the voice of the violins. The violins sang counterpoint to her inner tune. She should focus today on the head. This whirling cone was becoming a person. The hair needed to float from the body. She picked and prodded and picked again. A small brush flicked away the crumbs her detailing tool had pried up. Eventually, one section of the head matched her inner sight. She would have to add another media for the right effects. Probably wire, maybe spun glass. But at least she'd completed the base for the area. As the last strains of the final violin piece faded, she set her tools down. Sarah smiled, surveying her creation. She rinsed her tools and put them back into their velvet-lined wooden case. She would return soon. This figure was her Storm King, she decided, naming him. Carefully, she packed him away, covering him in his shroud. A little part of her rebelled as she tucked the plastic under him, a voice that urged her to continue to stay. No, tomorrow would come. In the meantime, her sculpture rested. She too would rest and hopefully dream normal dreams.